Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting today is Scott Tanfield from Friends of Fulham. This episode will be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Derby County at Pride Park. However, before that, Scott and I have some interesting topics to discuss in the Cottage Talk roundtable. We have much to get through in this episode, but before I do anything, I have to welcome Scott back to the show. Mr. Tanfield, how you doing?
Very well, Russ. Are you all right?
I am good, my friend. I'm very good. How are you doing?
Not bad. Busy with work. We've got this snow here at the moment. But we're battling through, I suppose. Let's just hope the game goes.
How much snow do you have, Scott?
I wouldn't say it's a lot. I mean, it's more foot and a half of snow. But I think it's the cold that's made it worse for us. Freezing, you know, sort of icy roads and a lot of the main motorways shut, you know. So nothing like Canada have or anything like that. You know, we wimp out of it over here, you know.
Well, it's funny because you and I were talking off air. I'm dealing with what we call a nor'easter. It's just a bad rainstorm, and eventually it's going to turn to snow, and it's wreaking havoc here. So I understand what you guys are going through. I know it's only rain, but things are going a little crazy here. So we're both dealing with the weather. So what better to do right now than talk about Fulham? That's what we're going to do. And Scott, first of all, I want to thank you for alerting me to this story in The Independent. We're going to start here in the Cottage Talk Roundtable. It's very interesting. And it is entitled, House of Ivica Jokanović Won Fulham's Power Struggle Over Transfers to Reignite Their Premier League Push. So Ivica Jokanović cuts a far happier figure now. He has wrested back control of players coming in and out of Craven Cottage, and results are vindicating his methods. This article was written by Jack Pitt-Brook. And Scott, I'm going to read a couple excerpts from it, and we're going to discuss it because there's some really interesting things in here. Let's start from the beginning. Here's the beginning of the article, and then after I've read that, I'll get your thoughts on it. Here's how it starts. The point sounds obvious, but to Ivica Jokanović, it was a vindication that he had been right all along. Here's a quote. Quote, I'm working here in England. I want English people or people who know what the English game is. Matt Target and Cyrus Christie and Alexander Mitrovic all signed for Fulham in late January and have reignited Fulham's push for promotion back to the Premier League. That's a part of the article. I will get to another quote in just a second. Jokanović speaks in a low growl, but when he looks back at the triumph of the transfer window, he started to get animated. Here's another quote from Savisa. Quote, all these three players came to the training ground, opened their bags, put on their boots, and played football. I don't have time now in this level to bring in people for another part of the world. That's in parentheses, especially with 12 games in front of us. I need people who know about driving the car in the English style, who know what life in England is. And that's the end of the quote. All right, Scott, let's talk about this part of the article. There's another part of the article that we'll get to that talks about the summer transfer window. This is about the signings in January. Your thoughts about this from The Independent and these quotes from Savisa. What do you get out of it?
Yeah, I mean, I see it popped up today on social media, on Twitter, and then I sort of put it on Friends of Fulham to see what sort of reaction we got from a few members on there. And it's, you know, it struck up quite a bit of interest, this article. And I think what it's done is kind of pieced that kind of bit of information together that we've been lacking in regards to the struggles that he's had over the summer and possibly this January transfer window. I mean, sort of reading the full article, as most people have done, I mean, there are some good sort of quotas in there where I think, you know, from him as an individual, he has struggled to get sort of players of his calibre through the door. And I think it's quite clear that he didn't have any type of kind of control over players that were coming in from all parts of the world, you know, not used to the English game and not used to the way that you know, Jokanović wanted to set up and play. I think what the article kind of tells you is that even though we had a frustrating start to the January transfer window, I think for once he had actually had some kind of insight and he had some kind of involvement in players that he wanted. And what he's saying is that, you know, for him to push, you know, for this, you know, Premier League, you know, promotion, the three players have come in, you know, they've laced their boots, they put their kit on and they've got out there. And as we've seen, they started doing the business and they've improved the side.
Absolutely. Very good point there, Scott. And listen, I want to read another excerpt that talks about January that goes along with what we're talking about here. Again, it's from the article. This January, Jokanović and the club were finally working harmoniously on signings again. Yes, the new players still needed to have good objective data, but they were also Jokanović's picks. all with his most important criteria, experience of this level. Here is another quote from Savisa. Quote, I'm now more satisfied than I was in the past. Jokanović smiles. Quote, it is simple. From my point of view, we are working with more sense and we make better steps. Part of work is making mistakes, but we must be careful to make less mistakes. Okay, Scott, so that goes along with what we're talking about in the January transfer window. What do you get from those quotes from Savisa?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he's rightly pointing out that, you know, we're not going to get everything 100% right. It's football. You're going to make the odd sort of mistake in buying a player. But, you know, I think what we'd done was we got the majority wrong. You know, I think, you know, from a summer transition, you know, of how we got on, you know, with our friendlies and, you know, sort of piecing that team together. There was no harmony there. I don't think there was any kind of togetherness. There wasn't any kind of connection between Djukanović and his players. And I, you know, and honestly feel that's why we had this kind of bad start. You know, and it's only kind of leading up till now when we've got sort of 12, 13 games to go that we're just hitting our peak. And it, again, is it too late? We don't know.
Okay, very good there, Scott. All right. One other part of this article that I want to talk to you about involves what happened over the summer. So I'm going to read this to you with some more quotes from Savisa. Here's from the article directly from The Independent. Since Klein's departure, club sources have noticed how much more relaxed and happy Jokanović is. He no longer has to fight battles over transfer policy, and he's no longer imposed with players he has no idea what to do with. Speaking to The Independent in his office at Craven Cottage, he still looks back on the summer transfer window, the last of the Klein era, as a missed opportunity. Here's another quote here, Scott. Here we go. Quote, this is from Savisa. We bought a few players in August without any preparation, without preseason, without these players knowing how we want to play, without me knowing what exactly they can offer us. Jokanović reflects, Johan Malo, Rafa Soares, and Marcel Diallo have barely been involved this season, not because they were data signings, but because they were never the right standard for the team. Here's another quote from Savisa. That was from the article. Quote, if the club brings some players that I don't use, there can be two reasons for that, Jokanović explains. Quote, one is that I don't believe he's good enough. The other reason is if I'm completely crazy, man, and I want to blame the player, but that would be without any sense. Okay, Scott, this talks a little bit about the summer. Your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of rightly pointing out that I think all of them players that he's mentioned there weren't his buys, weren't his recommendations. You know, and they were just brought into the club without any, you know, consultation from him, you know, and he, you know, he's had to try and work with that. It's kind of like knocking sort of like round pegs into square holes. You know, it's like anything we do, Russ, you know, if you work in a trade or any type of business, I mean, there's plenty of tools on the market, but there's a certain tool that probably fits your style. It might be the grip of that tool. It might be the way that it kind of drives or something. And if, you know, if you're a driving machine like Djukanović is, you know, he's going to want to use things that work for him. And he's rightly saying, you know, that, you know, Johan Möller, Rafa Soares and Marcelo Diallo, which was another eye-opener, you know, they're not even featuring. I mean, well, two are gone, one's not even featuring now.
Right. And I just want to clarify this. When I was mentioning their names, that was directly from the article. That was not a quote from Savisa. He does not name these players by name. He's just talking about the players in general. We have an idea who the players he's talking about, but he doesn't name them by name. The author does just mention that as basically part of the article. But it speaks volumes, Scott, because my whole thing going back to how we've been bringing in players is that I wanted to make sure that they were bringing in players that Jokanović wanted, that fit into the way that Jokanović played, that were ready-made. Yeah. It sounds like to me this summer they did not do that. No. But in January they learned their lesson.
Yeah. Well, if you go further down the article, Russ, I mean, it says Djukanović, quote, again, we bought a few players in August without any preparation. And that, you know, it's only a few words, but that speaks volumes. Yeah. You know, I mean, that tells you that we was not prepared in the summer. We wasn't prepared, obviously, in how we sort of targeted our players, how we brought them in, how we prepared them for the season. And that, you know, that's reflected on our start. And, you know, but like you say, January, you know, we've got key acquisitions in. They come straight into the side. You know, as I say, literally, they lace boots that, you know, got out there and they're really doing the business. I mean, we can't say too much about sort of Sirius Christie at the moment because he's not really played. You know, but the calibre of the player, where he's come from, you know, if, you know, Fredericks was to leave us in the summer, we've probably got a ready-made replacement there. So again, we thought ahead. You know, we prepared right. ourselves. So, you know, it looks better. But I think, you know, if kind of listeners get the chance to read this, it's on Friends of Fulham as well. It speaks a lot of sense.
Check this out.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Please do go to Friends of Fulham. Like I said, Scott did put it on there. You can definitely check out this article. I highly recommend reading it because it kind of gives you insight to, Scott, what we've been wondering for months now, exactly what was going on. These are the words of Slavisa along with the words of the writer, but he's just giving background to what's going on here. But the quotes are from Slavisa, so these are his words. And they speak volumes to me, my friend. But what's good about this is that it also shows, like I just mentioned, I think that we've turned the page from here. And maybe moving forward, January becomes the norm, Scott. That's what I'm hoping, that now they know what they've done wrong. And now when we move forward and we look to, say, this summer, whether we're in the Premier League or we're back in the Championship, I hope that they will be taking on a similar type of strategy when it comes to recruitment.
Well, if you think about, say we didn't get promoted this season, Russ, you know, the parachute payments run out next season.
Correct.
You know, we're going to have to sell somebody to fund that first team. And we probably know who it's going to be.
Yep.
You could probably lose three. next summer. If I say Fredericks, maybe Kearney and obviously Sessegnon. Now, you imagine you've got eight players on loan, so you've got to go back again and replace Kallas. You've got to go back and replace Piazon. You've got to go back and replace Mitrovic. You've got a hell of a lot of work to do in that summer period, even before you started preparing for the first games of the season, to make sure that, you know, Djukanovic has his team ready there to continue where we left off, which we hoped we were going to do last season. Right. So next season's going to be even worse. And you would have hoped, like you say, that we've turned a page. You know, we've got everyone singing off the same hymn sheet now. And if it is a situation we're still there next summer, we do this a lot better.
Exactly. And that's what I'm hoping here, because Scott, you bring up a great point about the this summer. If we don't get promoted, there is a huge amount of work to be done. And yes, Ryan Sessegnon would be a huge chip in that. I would truly believe the club would be forced to sell him because they would need the money. That's what I think would happen, and Kearney would be vulnerable. So there would be much work to be done. And you also mentioned all the loans. So they would be rebuilding this team, and they would need to be on the same page. I hope that this is an indication of what we're reading today, Scott, that they are finally on the same page, that they are talking in the same language, because it sounds like to me that there was lost in translation, speaking different languages. I think they're on the same page, and that to me is very important. Let's hope it continues this summer when we look forward to what Fulham do, and let's hope it's in the Premier League. All right, Scott. I want to talk about one other topic, and it involves a lone player. I want to get your thoughts on this because you and I have talked many times. I desperately wanted to see Fulham bring in a striker. They did in January. It is on loan, but here's the thing. There is speculation. It's just speculation, but I would expect Fulham, again, this is just in my opinion, to make a run at Alexander Mitrovic if we were to get promoted. If we were to get promoted, Scott, I would think that Fulham would try to sign him permanently. What are your thoughts on this? Would you like to see him sign permanently? Have you seen enough to convince you that you would want to see Mitrovic here permanently?
I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, I don't think I've seen enough yet. I mean, I've seen, you know, the couple of games that he's played, you know, and he's got better. You know, he was a complete force against Wolves. And I think he was a difference between, you know, one of sides breaking each other down. And he does show that bit of Premiership class about him. He's everything in a striker that you want. The hold-up player, the strength, you know, he pulls defenders out of games. You know, he lays balls off well. You know, and he's a leader. He when he's on the pitch, Russ, it's very difficult not to notice him, whatever he's doing. And we've missed that. I personally would just like to see, you know, we've got these 12 games to go and it's all talk at the moment. I mean, you know, as the biggest pessimist we are, there's things that can go wrong. But, you know, if he's what people are saying he is, then I'm hoping that for these last 12 games or whatever, he's really going to shine and, you know, hopefully sort of shoot us to promotion. I would hold judgment personally myself until the end of the season and see what his worth is.
Okay, very good there, Scott. And I understand that. That's why I wanted to talk about it, because the speculation, I believe, started with the Northern Echo. And I thought about this, and that's why I wanted to talk to you about this. Like you, I like what I've seen so far, but I think it's only been a small sample. I think we're going to continue to see it, and if we can continue to see it, I think Fulham definitely should make a run at him, Scott, if he continues to show what he's shown us so far.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the position that he's in, I think his Newcastle days are probably numbered. And I think, you know, they're going to put him in a shop window. And because of the World Cup coming up, you know, they're going to want all eyes on him. You know, his agent's going to make sure there's a lot of interest about him leading up to, you know, certain sort of things like the World Cup, et cetera, et cetera. But, no, I mean, I'm hoping that he kicks on with us. You know, he does really look the business. I'm just, you know, his next 12, 13 games. Is it 12 or 13 games, Russ? 12.
12.
12, yeah. You know, we need him as well as certain players, and I'll hold judgment at the end of the season.
Okay, very good there, Scott. All right. I have one bonus topic for you, and this is what it is. As we look forward, obviously, we all would love to see Fulham get automatic promotion. Second, 8 points away. Can it happen? Yes. But the odds are difficult for Fulham to get there because of the amount of matches left and the teams in front of them. It's going to be hard. So I want to go with the idea, just for this purpose, just to have a talk about this, Scott. Let's just say Fulham are in the playoffs, and the teams around them are in there as well. Which team would you not want to see face Fulham? Which team do you fear if Fulham got into a playoffs? They had a hard time with Reading last season. Let's say they're in it. Which team would you not want to see them come up against?
Okay. Forget last season. I think we're in a much better position this season if we were to get into the playoffs. A stronger team. I think we're playing a little bit more better football, and we've got more of a cutting edge against us. We've got more of a cutting edge with us this time. So I think we can do a lot of damage to sides that are in there. When it comes to a competition like that, I always say that you can't really fear anyone. It's a bit like a lottery in there. You know, you can't really duck and dive teams. If you're good enough to get out of that division, you've got to beat what's in front of you. And I've always said that come in the playoffs, and we've seen it so many times, like with Huddersfield, you know, sort of going up, and, you know, we were favourites, and that's just how it works. And it works the same ways for, like, the Villas. You know, if Middlesbrough creep in there, they're winning 2-0 tonight against Leeds. You know, they're all going to be tough sides. But, I mean, if I had to pick two that I wouldn't want to meet in the playoffs, I'd probably have to say it would be possibly Villa because of the size of their squad and the quality they've got. And even if Borough squeezed in there, I think they could be a bit of a dark horse. I could handle playing Cardiff. I could handle meeting Derby. And I could handle playing the likes of Bristol City. But, yeah, for me, it would be Villa and possibly Borough.
Okay. I'm going to be a little bit different. I'm going to be with you when it comes to Middlesbrough because I fear that team. Fulham got the victory there, and let's just say it was fortunate. You know, it was a tight match. That's a team that has a huge amount of talent. I don't want to see them make the playoffs, Scott, because I think that they're a huge threat. So I'm going to start with Middlesbrough. The other team, I'm going to say Bristol City, just because Bristol City know how to play against Fulham, and Lee Johnson knows how to play against Fulham. Villa, you know, again, I understand where you're going on Villa, but I think Fulham can handle Villa. Cardiff City, I think that they can handle Cardiff City. And Derby County, they'd be in the mix as well. But for me, the two teams are Bristol City and then also Middlesbrough. What are your thoughts about Bristol City? You don't fear them?
No, I think, I mean, with Bristol City, I mean we got a point there. I think on good form, you know, if we brought them to the Cottage, I think we could beat them at home. And if we play them at somewhere like Wembley, I do think we can beat them. There's only so many times, and I mean, I've always said this, whenever you play a team so many times in a division, there's only so many times that they get one over on you. And then after a while, you know, they fall short because you get used to playing them and you get used to knowing how they play. And I just feel that if we personally meet Bristol City in the playoffs, I think we might unlock them this time. But I'm going to go for the essence of I don't, with me with the playoffs, you can't fear anyone, Russ, and that's right. The problem. If you're good enough to get out of it, you've got to go, and it's four games, and you've got to play out your heart to get out of this division, and that's how I'm going to view it.
It's a good point there, Scott. It's funny because here I am saying, who do you fear? And you bring up a great point. If you're there, really, should you be fearing anyone? You should be feeling that you can beat anyone because you've earned that right to be there. So that's a good point.
Yeah, it's the mentality. You sort of reset.
Oh, I agree.
You know, it's not the championship. Championship is over. This is, you know, this is the playoffs, and you know, this is 90 minutes worth of football. It's 11 men v 11 men, and you know, whoever wants this the most is going to win. You know, and that's how I do it.
Okay, excellent, Scott. All right, let's now move forward and let's talk about this upcoming match with Derby County at Pride Park. This is a huge match. Two teams that are only a point apart. So let's do this first, Scott. I want to get your thoughts. Maybe this can tell us a little bit about the two teams. I do this stats comparison from WhoScored.com. I want to get your thoughts on these stats. They're all offensive stats, but I think that you can learn something from them. These are where both teams are in the league, again, from WhoScored.com. Let's start with goals in the league. Derby County are currently third with 53. Fulmer second at 57. Shots per game, Derby County are tied for 12th with 12.4. Fulmer are at fourth with 13.9. Shots on target per game, Derby County are tied at eighth with 4.3. Fulmer tied for fifth at 4.4. Possession, Derby County are 16th in the league. This one surprised me, Scott, at 48.7. But Fulmer first at 57.2. Passing success, Derby County are 10th at 74.4. Fulmer first at 82.6. Long balls, both teams are terrible long balls for obvious reasons because that's not their style of play. Derby County are tied at 21st with 69 and Fulmer dead last at 60. Aerials won, though. Derby County are 9th at 25.9 and Fulmer last at 15.7. Short passes, Derby County are 10th at 348 and Fulmer are first at 478. Okay, Scott, can you get anything out of this stats comparison between these two teams?
I mean, it's not a lot in there, to be honest with you. I mean, it shows a little bit more aerial dominant than us. We're clearly not, but we know that. I think it tells you that we play a lot more short passing to Derby's long passing.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, if you look at league positions, there isn't much between us, to be honest. Who's got the better squad? I'd probably say we have. You know, who's had the more settled football over the season? Probably Derby. You know, who's a better coach? It's a difficult one. I'd like to say Djukanovic. But the other fellow, I mean, he's had a more of a settled season with Derby.
Yep.
You know, it's a tough game, Russ. This really is. And I've been saying along that, regardless of Wolves, because I think most people had sort of knew that we could probably turn Wolves over at home. For me, this is the crunch game out of all of them. I think if we can get past this one, this really does unlock a lot of things for us.
I agree.
Kind of, you know, sort of leapfrogging Derby, and you know, sort of really pushing on for that second space if Cardiff starts stuttering, you know, lose it, and I don't know.
Very good there, Scott. All right, let's get into this. I'm going to share some more information from WhoScored.com just about characteristics of Derby County. Let's just start where the league table. Both teams are in the league. Derby County are fourth. They have 16 victories, 12 draws, 6 losses. They scored 53. They've given up 31. They're in a plus 22 goal differential and are on 60 points. Fulmer in fifth, 16 victories, 11 draws, 7 losses, 57 goals scored and 37 given up for a plus 20 goal differential and 59 points. So we are close there. Here are some characteristics of Derby County from WhoScored.com. Strengths, they got a good amount of them. Shooting from direct free kicks, finishing, scoring chances, counterattacks, attacking down the wings, creating long shot opportunities, creating chances using through balls, aerial duels, defending set pieces. They're weak at defending counterattacks. That's very interesting. Style play, attack through the middle, take long shots, short passes, attempt through balls often, non-aggressive, and consistent first 11. One other thing that I want to add, Scott, and I got this from my friend Andy Buckley Taylor, who I did an interview with, and you can listen to that on Cottage Talk as well. He told me that Darby County style is not, it is long passes, but it's not hoofing the ball up. They have direct long passes that set up their players. And it's funny because Birmingham City used to do the same thing, Scott. I don't know if you remember, under Rowett. It's a similar type of strategy. Yeah. They get the ball forward extremely quick. And that's a concern for me for this match. I want to get your thoughts on that, but also your opening thoughts on Derby County.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched them a couple of times, and they're, like you say, they're long ball, but they don't go high long with it.
It's not hoofing it.
No, they tend to, it's sort of long passes from like the wing-backs up to sort of wingers. It's kind of sort of playing in the centre of the park, and then they'll have like Vidra or something hanging off the last defender, and it'll be a long ball on the floor into his feet. And that's kind of how they play. They're going to be putting a lot of balls in there, and that's going to be something that we, I mean, especially like Ream and Callison, are going to have to contend with in the game. Passing wise, I think if we can keep the ball, I think we'll outpass Derby, and we've got to be sort of good on the counter attack. As I say, they're quite an aging side there, and they're not very good at defending games. We can certainly score goals, but so can they. And this is the problem. This could be, you know, like a 3-3 draw for me. You know, so, but you know, we've got to be positive. We are where we are. We're 13 unbeaten now. You know. And I think if we can keep up the morale, we can keep up the positivity, I don't see why we can't come back with the points. If I was to take a draw now, would I? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, very good, Scott. Let's now talk about players that concern you for this match. First one that I'm going to mention has to be Matej Vidra for me. He scored 17 goals. I know several of them were on penalties, but he is a proven goal scorer. He is now working very well within Gary Rowett's system. David Nugent has 6 along with Sam Winnell, but right now it's Nugent and Vidra are their main goal scorers. But they have some dangerous players. Tom Lawrence, Casey Palmer on loan from Chelsea is another dangerous player. I'm curious, who are you concerned with in this match with Derby County for Fulham?
I think it's Vidra, isn't it? I mean, Djukanovic knows quite a bit about him from his Watford days, sure. And he's scored against us before as well. So I think Vidra is the one that you've got to be looking out for. I mean, that's a lot of goals to have out your side. And I think there rumblings that he's suffering with a groin strain at the moment. They were going to assess him. I think it was yesterday and today. I mean, I've not seen or heard anything, but
I haven't heard anything recently since this morning, Scott. But this morning was that he was a slight doubt. That's what I was reading, the speculation. Yeah. Slight doubt, but
I mean,
been down this road before.
You have, yeah.
I never know what to expect here.
No, I mean, groin strains tend to hang about. I mean, not something that tends to sort of come up 1 week and then go the next. I mean,
I'm not sure if it's groin strain, but I know he's dealing with something.
Yeah, but we'll have to see. I mean, I think he's going to be the danger man. I mean, if he's hanging off the shoulder of either sort of Ream or Callas in that game, then they've got that kind of, you class with Nugent and him, you've got that big man, small man type scenario there, which we're going to have to deal with. But at the other end, we've now got the powerhouse as well, you know. So I'm looking forward to this one.
So am I. So am I, Scott. All right. Let's now look at it from our perspective. Who are your key players for Fulham? I'm going to throw out one name. I'm going to start right here because I think he could be huge in this match. I'm going to go right to Alexander Mitrovic because I think if they get the ball to him, he holds up the ball, brings everyone into play, Scott. I think that's going to set everything up for us. So I'm going to go right to Mitrovic. How about you?
Yeah, I think so. I think moving forward, we've spoken about this. I think he's always going to be a key player now because he's that type of forward that we've lacked. You know, so whatever he does now is always going to be, is going to be important to how we play. The more he does, the more he holds the balls up, the more he kind of drags defenders in, is going to sort of, again, like Sessegnon against Wolves, you know, sort of freeze him up or any type of wide players. But then, you know, we're spoilt for choice here, Russ. I mean, you know, Ayite, Piazon can come in, Cabano, you know, Kamara can come on. You know, this is like being at a sweet shop now. We've got so much
options.
So many options now that, you know, just this one piece of a jigsaw allows you to operate all these type of players. It kind of reminds me of what Djukanovic was doing at Watford. I mean, that time when they steamrolled us at home 5-1, was it, or 5-0?
When they had Vidra and Deeney,
but also had other wide players as well. They caused so many problems in the middle with Deeney that, you know, we were being hit from the left, the right, and we were being attacked in banks of fours. And, you know, this is Djukanovic's style. And, and I think by bringing someone like Mitrovic in is a piece of the puzzle that allows him to do this now.
He's the missing piece, Scott. I hate to say it that way, but it just seems that everything now fits.
It does. And, you know, we're not, you know, we're all fans. We pay our money. And, you know, we've been expressing for ages that this type of striker has been like the missing link to, you know, how we play. But let's not just praise him. I mean, how great has Matt Target been since he's coming? I mean,
fantastic.
He's laced up his boots. He's come in there. He's slotted straight in. And I mean, we're all banging on about losing what's his face at left back. He went to Huddersfield.
Scott Malone.
You know, this guy has come in and he looks Premiership quality. You know, he's comfortable on the ball. He looks natural. Doesn't panic. You know, he gives us time again on the ball to allow people to push forward. Another great acquisition, you know.
Absolutely.
So we've got a lot about us, and looking forward to it.
Very good. I would also say you've already said this, Scott. I think Ream and Kalas are going to be massive in this match as well, because they're going to have to be on their toes. And it's funny because my fear is we're going to see what we saw the last time we were at Pride Park. I think it's natural to fear that, but. How different is that team from last season to this season? At that point, we still have Button. We now have Bettinelli. So do you think that we are better prepared to play Gary Rowett and Derby County this season from last season at Pride Park?
Yeah, of course we are. And I think we've been better prepared to play most sides in this division, you know, sort of in the late stages of this season. I mean... we probably would have got beaten at Bristol City the other night, but we, you know, managed to get in front and we got a draw, which I thought was a very tough game. I think most fans would have come away with a point there. You know, that would have been a loss. Probably would have got beaten by Wolves at home. You know, we were great. I was there. It was bloody cold. Probably one of the most coldest days I've had down there. But we were awesome all over the park. And it's not just... I think the players that we've added, it's kind of it's the attitude from all the players. You're getting an extra 30% out of Fredericks on the right hand side. You know, people and players are starting to believe, I think, in Djukanovic's system and the way that he's talking at the moment and the way that the players are talking at the moment. We've got a winning mentality, you know.
Yep.
There isn't a losing mentality there. We're very positive, and I'm just hoping that this keeps up, because you need this within a promotion push.
Totally agree there, Scott. All right. We've kind of danced around several things of what Fulham need to do, but let's just nail it here. What do Fulham need to do to beat Derby County at Pride Park on Saturday?
I think we need an early goal in this one. If we can get an early goal, silence the crowd a little bit and allow us to settle, I think we can win this game. I think if we allow Derby to get on top, and the longer it goes on being 0-0, I think the more we risk of maybe coming away with nothing from Pride Park.
This is one match that I really want, Scott, because like you said, if they win this one, I think it sets up everything moving forward. This is a key match. If they were to get all 3 points, this is huge. A draw would be fine.
Draw would be fine. You know, we didn't expect to win against Wolves. I mean, I had, you know, because Neves was out and a few bits and pieces. I mean, we all, you know, we were building momentum. But this one is kind of like, it's that batch of games, and we've kind of overachieved so far. And if we win this one, it kind of just tips us over that edge. And it's kind of like it then starts looking a little bit more like a realistic push for second place. And I think if we can get something out of this, it changes completely.
I agree with you, Scott. All right. Let's now get to your starting 11. Who would be your starting 11 on Saturday against Derby County? I have a feeling I know what Savic is going to do. What would you do?
I mean, he's been saying all week about, I mean, I don't know whether it's mind games, but he's been openly sort of saying that he's got ideas and plans for Derby of how to suit their style. And he's been very positive himself. I mean, I think that he's probably going to probably stick with the same side going into this. I think he has to. So, I mean, for me, I mean, obviously, Bettinelli in goal, Target on the left, Frederick on the right, Callis Ream at the back. He's going to go, I think. I mean, Kearney didn't look 100% fit, but he seemed to slot in well there. We'll probably start again with Kearney, McDonald, Johansson, Mitrovic up front. I think you'll probably find that he's going to play Yeate again on the right, and then we're going to have Sessegnon on the left. And I think that's how he's going to approach this game.
Okay. I want to get your thoughts because we've been talking a good amount about Ayite. Do you like Ayite? Do you think he's worthy of starting on Saturday? Savisa seems to really favor him. What are your thoughts on Floyd Ayite?
I mean, for me, it's, I mean, fans tend to concentrate more on Ayite's final ball. Or, you know, his goal-scoring attributes and his misses and stuff like that. But if you look at Ayite off the ball, his pass accuracy is very good. He's a tricky player to track. I think Wolves, you know, they had problems with him the weekend. And he's one of them sort of players that I think just goes about his business silently, but it happens in short spurts with him, and he can really kind of unlock defences. And I think that's why he sticks with him, Russ.
Okay. Well, also, again, that these are very good points, and he trusts him. I think trust is a big part of it. Wouldn't you agree, Scott? Because I think he knows what he's going to get from Floyd Ayite.
I think so, yeah. And I mean, once in a while, he will score. He's not the best of finishers. You know, he's not as bad as a Luko. you know, but, you know, he does come up with the goods. I mean, the way that he controlled that ball against Villa. And I mean, that was in itself. I mean, he had to be calm, composed to even get that ball in the net from that distance, you know, acting on impulse. And if you watch Floyd Ayite sort of off the ball and what he does with the ball, I mean, the ground that he makes up, you know, the sort of the players that he beats and balls that he delivers, you know, he offers that kind of contribution to the team a lot more than you kind of see from Piazon and people that time. And I think that's why, you know, Savisa trusts him.
Okay, excellent there, Scott. All right. It's time to go to predictions. Let's start with the Cottage Talk Twitter poll I did earlier. I did it kind of late, so I don't have that many votes. I had 118. Win was at 56%, draw was at 31%, and loss was at 13%. All right, Mr. Tanfield, what's your prediction for Saturday?
I would love us to come away with a win. And if we do, I'll be dancing around my front room in my pants if that happens, Russ. I really would.
I'll be there with you, Scott. Here, you know, not with you.
No, exactly, yeah. I'm not going, unfortunately. I've got stuff to do at home. But, yeah, I mean, I will take a draw. I think a draw would be a good result. But if we won this, I really do think it kind of opens up that second push, you know, unlocks that kind of second part of pushing for second place. I'm gonna go for a draw. I'm going to say 1-1. But in the back of my mind, I'm hoping that we come away with a 2-1 win.
Okay, I'm going to go right with you, Scott. I'm going to say 1-1. But in the back of my mind, I'm hoping that you're right, because it would be a massive 3 points. But I could definitely see us getting something out of this. This is a tough team. Gary Rowett has been difficult to play against for Fulham. Like I mentioned, Birmingham City, he was difficult. He's been difficult with Derby County. So it's not going to be easy. But I think that we're on such a roll that I wouldn't be shocked if we got the victory. But I definitely think we can get something from it. So I'm going to go with you, Scott, and I'm going to say it's a 1-1 draw. Okay, very good. Before we go, let's just talk a little bit about Friends of Fulham. You mentioned that the article from The Independent is up there right now, so please check it out. Just talk about other things that you're seeing that are trending on Friends of Fulham.
I mean, we get daily things that sort of trend. I mean, we're generally quiet towards the beginning of the week until we build up to the game. I mean, there's a couple of sort of, I mean, at the moment, the article is actually trending at the top at the moment. It's had about 7 replies now. Borough winning, as we know, 2-0. The Manager of the Year award, that went to Roy Hodgson, didn't it? I think quite a few people were surprised with that. You know, don't get me wrong, I'll give Roy anything, but I mean, that's up there at the moment. There's something about Lee Mason at the moment. Are the media overreacting? Will Derby be cancelled? That's another big one that's been talked about this week. You know, are we going to get the sort of midday tomorrow and then they cancel it? You know, when we've taken sort of...
Let's hope not. Let's hope not. You know, it's funny, Scott. I actually have Darby's weather on my weather app, and I keep checking because I'm concerned about that. We should just say we're recording this Friday night in England, and right now the match is on, but I have a feeling it will be assessed in the morning. Let's just hope it goes off because we all want to see the match. And but weather is a concern going into this match, and let's hope that they can get this match in. But I certainly don't want it to be a danger to anyone. So if the conditions are okay, you know, I hope we see the match. But if it's dangerous, please don't play the match. That's the way I always look at situations like that. I'm glad that you mentioned the situation with Roy Hodgson. I forgot to mention, I'll just mention this at the end. Congratulations to Ryan Sessegnon at the London Football Awards. He won two awards. So congratulations to him, because it's not just a reflection on him, obviously. It's a wonderful reflection on him. It's also a great reflection for Fulham Football Club. It's great to see. So congratulations to Ryan Sessegnon. It's the beginning of a wonderful career. All right, Mr. Tanfield, great show. Fantastic show. Anything else you want to say before we go?
No, I think we've covered most things, Russ. I'm just hoping that we can get those 3 points on Saturday and we continue as we are. I mean, all good runs have to come to an end at some point, but I just don't want it to be Saturday. Get us past that, you know, make everyone's weekend. And, you know, I think it'll prove to us if we, you know, as I said, if we can get them 3 points, you know, this could be the real deal. I mean, I think a lot of fans are teetering on the edge at the moment. Will we, won't we? Are we going to bottle it? You know, are we really sort of... But I think a win up there will really kind of embed it into... It will just make confidence even stronger, us, if we can get them 3 points. So that's my only wish, if we can do that. And I think it'll be a happy camp all round.
Well, I second your wish, because I want that too, my friend. I want this to continue building. And listen, we could be in for a setback tomorrow. We'll see. It's Friday night. What I'm talking about Saturday. We will see. But if it's not a setback, and if it is a result, that's a great thing for Fulham Football Club. All right. Great show. Fantastic show. But it is time to go. For Scott Tanfield from Friends of Fulham, I am Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.